Even on a rainy day, you can't dampen the enthusiasm for the seaside. I'm sheltering a little bit from the drops. We've got people passing, anticipating a visit to the seaside. You can't always guarantee fine weather, but you can guarantee fresh air, and fresh air means fun. And it's that notion of who came to the seaside, when, why. Why did they choose Ramsgate that we're really going to focus on today? For me, as an art historian primarily, Ramsgate Sands is always living on in my mind's eye, as articulated in the painting by William Powell Frith. He was a man with a large family who liked his holidays in Ramsgate, and he suddenly hit upon the notion that he could paint a picture of modern life, which wasn't really necessarily what he'd been doing before then. And he decided that he would paint these pretty parties that collected themselves upon the sands. Now, nowadays, there's lots and lots of holiday makers, and they all come with their parasols and their accoutrements, and actually, they don't have parasols, do they? They have umbrellas nowadays, whether to guard against the sun or the rain. But apart from little details, little slight sort of technological updates like the cars that you'll hear passing me instead of carriages, not much, I think, has changed since Victorian times. So today, join me on a walk from the main sands in Ramsgate along and up to the East Cliff, where we're going to think about the notion of parade, promenading, see and be seen, and why it was that people came to the seaside and why they still want to come to Ramsgate, particularly today. I've just shifted position slightly to take me away from the noise of the Medway Queen, this wonderful paddle steamer that's being restored on the slipway. And now I'm sitting under the shelter of Wetherspoon's balcony that leads you straight onto the beach, so I can see right out to sea. Strip of sand in the middle, children making sand angels in front of me, lots of people chatting, enjoying themselves. Parading is a great place for people watching. Let's learn a bit more, though, about the rhythm of life in Victorian times. As the writer Coleridge put it, he likes to ramsgatize when it comes to the seaside. So behaviour is a little bit different, a bit more relaxed at the seaside. And we'll hear now from Geraint Franklin. And he wrote a wonderfully illustrated book with contributions from Alan Brodie and Mick Dermott. And this illustrated informative book is called Ramsgate, the Town and its Seaside Heritage. And it contains superb photographs, some aerial photographs. And it was published by Historic England in 2020.
From the early 18th century, taking the sea air, sea bathing, and even drinking sea water were promoted to the social elite as healthy and restorative activities. The poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who was a regular visitor to Wellington Crescent and Plains of Waterloo, wrote in 1821, "The sea air and the sea plunges, and the leisure of mind, with regular devotion of the daylight to exercise, for I write only after tea, have been auspicious, beyond my best hopes, to my health and spirits." The first visitors in the middle of the 18th century must have experienced a small fishing village, with a harbour in progress, an inn or two, but very few facilities. As the resort developed, it acquired miniature versions of all the venues and services you might expect in a place like London or Bath. Before long, there was an assembly room, coffee houses, billiard rooms, subscription libraries, bath houses, and a chapel of ease. These weren't grand facilities by any stretch of the imagination. Often they were converted out of existing buildings.
There's a fascinating parallel there, isn't there, about what he says about converting previous buildings that were built for a different function with Wetherspoons. But actually, Wetherspoons, which now dominates Ramsgate seafront, it was originally built as an Edwardian pleasure palace, if you like. It was a place where you could come and you could have concerts, and there were little stalls where you could buy things, you could buy buckets and spades, etc., outside. And it's called the Victoria Pavilion, so it's dedicated to Queen Victoria. But where I'm sitting on the ground floor, I'm seconds away from feeling the sand between my toes. I'm going to go down onto the beach now. I'm going to experience that, so you can come with me. Maybe wander down to the sea, spend some time on the beach, or sit and listen, and do a bit more people watching. And when you're ready, make your way from the front of Wetherspoons around to the opposite side towards. There's a blue kiosk there that sells refreshments, and it's a lifeguard centre. So make your way around there, and I will rejoin you there, and we can have another chat about what we're seeing. But meanwhile, let's return to Geraint, who's going to explain a little bit more about life at the seaside in the 19th century and the rhythm of life for its visitors.
There was a certain rhythm to Ramsgate's day. For many visitors, the day started with early morning sea bathing. Visitors were conveyed into the water in a horse-drawn bathing machine and would pop out at the back, their modesty protected by a canvas hood. After bathing, it was common to stroll on the pier or collect shells on the beach. You might explore the harbour, charter a small boat on a pleasure trip, or make an excursion to Pegwell Bay or Margate. Evenings were spent in the library or the assembly room. Until the mid-19th century, Ramsgate lacked a concert hall, although evening recitals were sometimes given in private houses.
I've moved around to the other side of the pavilion now. You can probably hear children getting their feet scraped free of sand as they come off the beach. In front of me, you can see the place that sells the deck chairs, actually rents them. And in Frith's time, you could rent chairs, but they weren't deck chairs. You can see in his painting, there's the name of the establishment that rents out the deck chairs. In his painting, people are not just going down into the sea and having a swim. They're in their bathing machines. We don't have those in our days, do we? And we don't have dippers either, who would force you under the water. These would be sort of strong working women, and you pay them to dip you under the water to make sure that you've really benefited from the sea. I can see some children in the distance, and they're trampolining and doing all sorts of roly-polies. And yesterday, when I was down here, a little child just saw the trampolines and squealed with delight and ran towards them. So there's all sorts of entertainment here. Now, if I turn and look towards the East Cliff, I can see that dominating my view is the gable end of a light grey building that's now called the Albion Hotel, and it's a beautiful boutique hotel. It's been lovingly restored. And that is very much as it appears in Frith's painting from 1853, and it's also a scene that you can recognise, apart from the fact there's a lift and there's an amusement arcade in front of it. And you can just about see the top of Wellington Crescent, and that's where we're going to proceed to. So we're going to go up some stairs, we're going to go up to the cliff level. But before we leave this level, let's just think a little bit about the history and development of this as a place of resort.
The early resort had quite an exclusive character, playing host to the aristocracy and the gentry. But throughout the 19th century, economic changes and improvements in transport opened up Ramsgate, first to the middle classes and eventually to working class people, until you get the mass tourism of the early 20th century. In response to the broader social spectrum, the better off visitors started to move outwards and upwards to the cliffs. Development at resorts is always based upon sea views, sea air, and access to the seashore. From the cliffs, you get marvellous sea views and clean air, but you are a respectable distance from the working town and its harbour. You start to see this process as early as 1789, when work begins on Albion Place on the East Cliff, and not long after, Nelson Crescent on the other side. Behind the seafront, you get more modest lodging houses and residence dwellings. So you're talking about a form of social zoning. I think the seaside is above all a social place. It isn't just about gazing out to sea and communing with nature. Resorts have always been about social interaction and networking with other visitors. So for a long time, the local newspapers would publish a list of daily arrivals to Ramsgate. A large part of the experience was about social display, seeing who's about and showing off. In 1820, one visitor, named William Porden, recorded in his diary, "From my window, I could also see and be seen by every person going or coming between the western houses and the town."
If you walk round to the front of the Royal Victoria Pavilion, you'll be able to see in front of you the London Restaurant, as it's called, Peter's Fish Factory, Harrison's Restaurant. It's almost like stepping into Frith's painting, because those will appear in it quite clearly. And the other thing you can see in the painting, that you can see very clearly in real life, is what we call the Royal Toothpick. And that's an obelisk that was given by the town in grateful thanks when George IV dedicated this town the only royal harbour in the country. So that's one of our USPs we're very proud of. And you can see it, an inscription in Latin and in English, and it marks when he set off for his Hanoverian towns, because of course George IV was also the King of Hanover, and he decided instead of going from Dover that he would leave from Ramsgate. And one of the reasons he enjoyed it so much here was, well, he did rather enjoy the hospitality of a lady, Lady Curtis. She was the wife of William Curtis. He's also called Billy Biscuit. He's one of our local heroes, because he was the one who supplied the ship's biscuits to the Navy. And I don't think that was really what George IV was interested in. He was rather more fond of his wife. There's always a bit of scandal around George IV. One of the reasons it said that he left from Ramsgate and not Dover was because his estranged wife, Queen Caroline, had received such a rapturous welcome in Dover that he didn't want to be associated with the place. Standing here from the vantage point of one of Ramsgate's many cafes that overlook the harbour, you can really enjoy watching people go past enjoying themselves. I saw a wonderful little girl eating an ice cream, a big double cone with a flake in it. Some pleasures are very, very traditional, aren't they? Talking of traditions, I'm looking over and I can see Cannon's Wet Fish Stall. And the Cannons are a well-established family here in Ramsgate, selling fresh fish. And that does remind us of the origins of the town, doesn't it? The idea that it grew up from a little fishing village. In fact, if we think of the name, it's an opening that takes us to the sea, a Ramsgate, an opening in the cliffs that takes us down to sea level. Some people even think it might come from the name Romans Gate, where the Romans would come down and they would go and they would disembark or embark their slaves here. But let's not delve that deep into the history. Let's look instead at the town from this wonderful vantage point, because I can look up and I can see the end of my vision there is the West Cliff, and I can just about see Churchill's pub on the corner, the end of Addington Street, Nelson's Crescent. You come down and there's a great arch of arches, if you like. There's a road that comes down from the Westcliff, and it was only built in the 1890s. So before that, the East Cliff and the West Cliff were very separate. And the arches now house lovely little cafes. You can sit there, you can look out at the sea, you can really enjoy this bustling and busy working harbour. Or you can carry on, and you can carry on up the slope to something called Madeira Walk, where I'm going to take you on today's walk up onto the East Cliff. But before we set off from this spot, just a little information to situate you. The town itself developed from a crossroad that you can access. If you go straight ahead of you and you go up past the Royal Pub, you'll be going up Harbour Street. And Harbour Street eventually takes you to a crossroads. And the sea came all the way up to that point. You join me as I enter Albion Gardens that Geraint was telling us about on the East Cliff. So I've walked up Madeira Walk, which is the road that connects us from the harbour up to the East Cliff. And the whole of the view is dominated by these sort of red rocky outcrops with nooks and crannies in that you can sit at as the road winds its way up to Albion House. Now, these curious rock formations are called Pullamite, and the name comes from three generations, all called James Pullam, who formed a firm to create this artificial rock that would look natural. And this was a fashion that really began with people like Humphrey Repton, the idea that you might have naturalistic looking rockeries. But obtaining your rocks was difficult. So by the 1840s, the race was on to find an alternative that could be manufactured but still look natural and still host your lovely exotic plants. So Pullam and Sons, they had a business that lasted them 100 years from 1845 to 1945. And Ramsgate boasts some of their most important work. By the 1890s, 1895, they had received a royal warrant, and they were talking about durability guaranteed. And in the 1890s, Ramsgate Corporation commissioned them to create Madeira Walk, with the actual jewel of our crown, really, one of our many jewels, that is, which was also sadly christened the Ratepayers' Tears because it was thought to be so costly. And that's a magnificent waterfall. So as the bus or your feet or your car takes you up the winding Madeira Walk, you pass a magnificent waterfall. Now the Pullamite there is in need of repair, and we're going to talk about that later on, and that was one of the things that the HAS report focused on. But before we do that, let me just tell you that this feature of Ramsgate was so successful that in the 1930s, some more Pullamite was built at something called Winterstoke Gardens, and that's where we're going to end our tour today, our walk today. And you might remember back to our exploration of the Western Undercliff in podcast one, and there's a chine there, a steeply Pullamited valley that takes you down to sea level and up where you can continue your walk to Pegwell Bay. So those two additions are later than the core of the 1890s Pullamite. So the benefit of Pullamite is that it looks natural, it's cheaper to produce and source than natural rock, it's made out of building rubble, and it's covered over with two layers of render, so that can be between half a centimetre and 1.5 centimetres thick. And it's made from a sort of sandstone, and it's made to look natural. So we're going to walk on now. We're going to go to Albion House, where I can see a very curious blue plaque that's enticing me on to learn more. So as I walk on, I'm just going to introduce you to one of our famous former visitors, or rather, I'm going to let him introduce himself.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys. I am Samuel Taylor Coleridge, here on holiday from Highgate, where I stay with a surgeon and his wife, my dear friends James and Anne Gilman. They have been my friends and minders for many years, for truth to tell, I suffer constantly from ill health and have developed an addiction to opium. From 1819, we have taken our holidays every year here in Ramsgate. Sometimes we have stayed in the nearby plains of Waterloo, but as today, sometimes in this very handsome Wellington Crescent, where we have frequented number 7, 28, 29, this year choosing number 3. We come sometimes by steamboat, arriving at the harbour, sometimes by coach, mostly in October and November, the best months for the sea bathing cure, when the water is just cold enough. Of course, I do try to write when I come down here, though not so much poetry as in the days of my youth. The Ancient Mariner, for example, you may remember the lines, "It is an ancient mariner, and he stoppeth one of three. By thy long grey beard and glittering eye, now wherefore stopp'st thou me?" There is much talk at present in Ramsgate of the new St. George's Church, which has just been built in Broad Street, on the other side of town. There is to be a service of consecration conducted by the Archbishop of Canterbury on October the 23rd, and I have been invited to attend. The new church will be a major landmark for the town, with its fine tower visible far out to sea. Well, I do hope you'll enjoy your visit. If you are going anywhere near Burgess and Hunt's library in Queen Street, I should be glad of your company. There's always good civilized discussion and debate there. I might also go by Dyson's Hot Baths on Harbour Parade, for a contrast to the cold sea water. No? You do not go that way? Then we must go our separate ways. Possibly we shall meet again. It has been good to have even this brief meeting. Good evening to you.
It's about to rain, so I've taken refuge in Albion House, which is a wonderful boutique hotel, lovingly restored in the teens. It used to be a rather scruffy municipal building, and I used to do lectures here, so it's nice to be in these rather plush surroundings. You can take tea or coffee or whatever you like. You can look out to the sea, and you can listen to the sounds, but at the moment, with the windows open, we've got quite a lot of traffic noise as we see the cars going past as they turn the corner at the top of Madeira Walk. Queen Victoria stayed here and made so many happy memories that actually she went and bought Frith's painting. She couldn't quite buy it outright and take it home because it had already been promised for engravings to be made after it, but it's now in the Royal Collection. And it's also in many, many middle-class homes and otherwise because its fame has spread and it's put Ramsgate firmly on the map.
I rather like the fact that by the 1840s you had Pugin's Catholic community bounding the western edge of town. In the middle you've got nonconformists, lots and lots of nonconformist chapels spring up, and you've got Anglican because you've got Christchurch and you've got St George's, and then on the eastern edge of town you've got Sir Moses Montefiore and Lady Judith Montefiore, and they built the most amazing house, a house and gardens to which Princess Victoria was given a golden key when she stayed here in Alvenhurst. They also were great philanthropists, and they built a school, no longer surviving, sadly. But what you can go and visit, and it's a deeply spiritual place, you can visit the synagogue and mausoleum that they created. And with that, they also bequeathed woodland, so you can walk in this quiet woodland. You can just really snatch some time to contemplate. And as it says in the board at the beginning of the woodland, there's a lovely information board there, their motto was think and thank. Linger a little longer just to enjoy this snippet of information from Geraint that will allow us to conjure up a vivid image of the sound environment for 19th century tourists and residents.
There was also, shall we put it, a more secular side to Ramsgate, which was noted for its entertainment, eating and drinking, and general carousing. One sketch of 1853 recorded, "On the terraces, groups of lazy promenaders, balcony parties, flirting and laughing with each other, and musical parties, from which the sounds of the piano and the harp fly through the open windows into the cool night air."
It's really windy out there, which is not great for the sound quality, so I'm going to linger here a little bit longer and tell you a little bit more about Queen Victoria, because she really enjoyed her stay here as Princess Victoria. And she wrote in her diary of January 1836 that the house was small and very cold, but cheerful, snug, and even comfortable. My little room had three windows, all having a fine view of the harbour and the pier. Well, she came here as Princess Victoria in 1835, but she sadly very soon got typhoid, so she had a prolonged stay, but she really enjoyed the health-giving properties of the sea and playing on the beach. I say playing, you know, she was a young woman. And when she was here in what's now the hotel, she could no doubt look out, and from where I'm sitting I can look out to the far horizon, the container ships on the horizon. Nearer to me I can see cars going around the corner, Madeira Walk. I can see in the distance the obelisk, and if I really look hard I can even see the whole sweep of Sandwich Bay from Deal Pier and Pegwell Bay right over to where the former Pfizer's factory is sort of twinkling at me, where they created the Pfizer riser, so to speak. Enough of that. And I can also see the cupola of what is now the Tourist Information Centre, the Custom House, and beyond that, the Royal Toothpick that I mentioned earlier. But I want to take you even further back in time. I want to take you to the Napoleonic era. Let's just imagine. So we've got some of the buildings on Albion Gardens, Albion Place, being created, lovely residences where you can look out, enjoy the view and pleasure of gardens. But if you are a resident here, then what you are doing is looking out across the channel. Remember, we could see France on the last walk, and you're thinking about the proximity of your enemies over the water there. And the whole of the land to the top of the street from where I'm sitting, the top of the hill from Albion House, was laid out as army encampments. So it's farmers' fields, then became army encampments. And you can just imagine, can't you, the palpable fear of invasion. And if you've been told as a child to be good or the bogeyman will get you, you might chime with the notion that Napoleon Bonaparte was that bogeyman. It's a corruption of his name. And then after the victorious Battle of Waterloo, that was still recent bloody history for so many, the land, the farmland that was then parade grounds, was bought up by speculators. And actually you can really get the feeling of that from the names that you see around you. So there's a road called the Plains of Waterloo. There's another one called La Belle Alliance Square. And the area just outside Albion Hotel, if you go left when you come out the main door, you'll see a really grand, white, double-fronted, detached, classically inspired facade, exactly the sort of architecture that Pugin hated. You'll notice how shallow the house is. You know, it's built for show and not for comfort, really. And it was built for a shipwright who could look out. You can imagine he'd love the view. That was built in 1825, and he and his associates, they bought up the land and they created this wonderful Wellington Crescent. And I advise you to really look closely at that crescent, because it's got some Grade II listed buildings. And that's one of the locations where so many visitors took rooms. You had Wilkie Collins here, you had William Powell Frith, when he was painting Ramsgate Sands, well, he lodged in various places around the town, but he certainly lodged at Wellington Crescent. So it's a bit windy out there, and before we leave the relative quiet of the cafe, I want us to return to Geraint Franklin and his narrative. He's going to tell us a little bit more about the pleasures of the parade, which we'll soon experience for ourselves.
Promenading, strolling in one's most fashionable attire, was at the heart of the resort experience. The cliffs and the rope walks, there was one on George Street and another on Callan Road, were popular spots to promenade, as were the twin piers of the harbour. Later on, private pleasure grounds and municipal parks were laid out for the purpose. One of the grandest was in front of the Granville Hotel, and limited to paying guests. An admissions kiosk survives. It included a tree-lined promenade and a sunken garden, used in the winter as a skating rink.
As I've walked past Eastcliff House and now promenading next to Wellington Crescent, I've got the sea on my right, and it is glorious. We've got blue skies, cotton wool Magritte clouds, and the sea in front of you is sparkling, sequin-like. It's a little bit windy. I can see a beautiful kite flying there. I can see the safety flag flying to show us the lifeguards are there. Looking down at the amusements where we saw the children trampolining, and heading towards, on the horizon for me now, if I look parallel to the seafront, I can just see the little red spiral roof of the kiosk that Geraint mentioned. And here, just entering the bandstand now, there's a blue plaque at the entrance telling us about Ramsgate's military and heritage history, and it tells you about Wellington Crescent. Large gun emplacements, batteries and fortifications were sited for the Second World War, including HMS Fervent, an underground Royal Navy headquarters. So we'll think more about that sort of naval history when we have podcast 3 that looks into Ramsgate as a harbour of refuge. But now I'm just going towards the bandstand and seeing if I can get out of any wind that there might be. And I'm looking then towards the Plains of Waterloo. And you can just imagine the sounds that you would have heard here in Edwardian times. And you can imagine the people looking out from those wonderful houses in Wellington Crescent. They really have a very commanding view. Now, I don't know that many people really know enough about the Napoleonic history, or certainly, I'm just talking from my own experience. At school, we were taught the Tudors, we were taught the World Wars, but we weren't really taught anything else in history. It's a bit different now, I know. And let's just think about how we can interpret that past today and One of the public sculpture artworks that I really enjoyed being involved with was created here in 2015, so that's 200 years after the Battle of Waterloo, and it was created by Teresa Smith, and we're going to meet her in the next podcast, and we're also going to hear a bit more about that. We made bunting inspired by objects in museum collections associated with the battle, so things like Wellington boots, but the most evocative thing for me was the Waterloo teeth, which told the story of the teeth that were extracted from the soldiers on the battlefield. And they came to adorn the mouths of many a richer person. So who knows, there might have been Waterloo teeth parading in the mouths of the Victorian visitors or earlier who were on this spot before us. So you can't see that installation anymore. And you will be able to see from September 2021 another installation here. And that's by a very renowned artist. He's called Conrad Shawcross. And just as I mentioned that Teresa involved the community, so that's why I said we, because I was there sort of cutting things out, as were my children. This project with the Conrad Shawcross sculptures involved children from Ramsgate Art Primary. And I really think that if you want to get people interested in heritage, it has to be done from the very earliest age and in the most engaging way possible. So Shawcross's sculptures will be erected and they will look like, well, I think they look a bit like giant windmills. They're colourful, kinetic. You can wind a handle at the base of the sculpture and it will change the colours as they go around. They're large, circular structures. And they're not just fun, they also have a serious message, because the signalling in the sculptures signals out home. So I can't see them at the moment because they're not there yet. And I also, unfortunately, can't meet any of the costumed interpreters who come and bring this area to life. They animate our history with actors, volunteers, playing these characters. Yes, I'm sorry to break the bubble. They are, in fact, that wasn't, in fact, Coleridge. That was a very talented actor. And I'm going to take you now towards the Granville, and there you... If you are very lucky in the summer, you might meet a costume character. You might meet the housekeeper of Edward Pugin. But now let's just carry on and we will see what we can see. As I walk towards the little kiosk, it now sells postcards and souvenirs. Buckets, spades, beach toys. It's rather tempting. There's some ice cream there as well, but I won't stop. Normally, if I go on a walk, it's a kind of hop from cafe to cafe. And it really doesn't matter what the weather's like in Ramsgate, because there's always somewhere to shelter. The sky is always different. As Turner said, the most wonderful skies, the most beautiful skies in the whole of Europe. And now I'm entering Victoria Parade. So remember that in the time of the 1870s, when Edward Pugin built his Granville Hotel, well, it started out as a speculative development. It was going to be housing, and it had these beautiful gardens laid out in front, these Italianate gardens, and the little kiosk that I've just passed would give you exclusive entry. And in the winter, you could do your ice skating, as we've heard. I'm just going to take you towards the bust of Edward Pugin that I can see on the horizon, and past a fountain that's newly been painted, a nice modernist fountain that celebrated the Festival of Britain in 1951. So you've got layers upon layers upon layers of history. And I'm going to hand over to Sandra Silver, our Blue Badge guide, who's going to tell us a little bit more.
Well, it was the cult of the seaside, because there was all sorts of emphasis on the purity of the sea air. The medicinal properties of the seawater used to come and have bathing in cold or hot seawater in the Granville Hotel. They used to pump it up. You see that massive tower-like structure. It looks like a castle from afar. That was the pump room or the pump tower where the seawater was brought in. You could either have a cold bath or a hot sea bath. The Granville was designed by Edward Pugin. He went bankrupt because initially it was built as five large houses, Because what you see, the frontage that you see today is slightly has been changed slightly to create this overall image of one structure. But it was built by him because the railways were coming to Ramsgate and brought people in from the cities, and they needed to accommodate them. And this was a fantastic venue in the 19th century, the new Granville Hotel.
So, as a great seaside resort, Ramsgate was suffering, really, into the 20th century from people wanting to go abroad, and its decline into the 20th century really was a bit of a decline from its Victorian heyday. But let's just pretend we're still in that Victorian heyday, shall we? Let's just carry on promenading. I'm looking out. I can see the wind farm on the horizon. That's a great employer nowadays. It's all very well to have the tourism, and tourism is really growing, and it's always been the bedrock of Ramsgate's economy. But the wind farm, at least, does offer some form of employment locally. And I'm rather struck by the fact that the Conrad Shawcross sculptures that I was just describing to you, they're going to be very reminiscent not only of children's colourful windmills that you put on the beach, but also this great source of renewable energy, sustainability. So I find myself now in front of what looks like a lot of almshouses. You've got three corners of a square, with the front of the square open so you can see the view, see the sea. But they're not, in fact, almshouses. They're Coast Guard cottages, so they had a very serious intent. They were there to look out at the sea and to help people, help alert the Coast Guard if there were to be anyone in distress. Sometimes the gentlemen would bathe in the nude, and sometimes the ladies, when they came out of their bathing machines... bathing machines were invented about 1790. The modesty garments that they wore would cling to every contour. So this was rather a good spot to view the goings-on and not only look out for ships in distress or boats in distress, but maybe maidens in distress who would be rather more distressed if they knew that you're looking at them. So there are some great Punch cartoons of people with their binoculars spying from the cliff tops. And talking of Punch cartoonists, there was one called Linley Sanborn, and he lodged on the West Cliff, and he loved to depict life in all its forms. He had a wife and a holiday home in Westwood, which is now a large shopping centre, but rather genteel. And sometimes when she went there, he would stay back in London with his maid and take compromising photographs of his maid that he kept hidden from his wife, but he'd use them for his people in his cartoons. And then he came and he lodged here on the West Cliff. But here on the East Cliff, I've just arrived at a beautiful sign that says Winterstoke Gardens, and a bit of the history is told here. So this was built on land bequeathed by the Montefiore family. Remember them? Think and thank the Jewish philanthropists who had their home on the East Cliff. And they're now Grade 2 listed gardens, and there's a sun shelter also that we'll go and visit, sponsored by Dame Janet Stancombe Wills in 1920. Well, she was a real character. She was a suffragette in her time, and she became the mayor. She was dubbed the Clifftop Amazon for her charitable efforts around Ramsgate. So she founded and funded an elementary school, a maternity ward, a nursing home, firefighting equipment and an ambulance. She was the first recipient of the Freedom of the Borough of Ramsgate in 1922, and she became its first woman mayor in 1923. She was also a friend and sponsor of Ernest Shackleton's 1914-17 Imperial Transantarctic Exhibition, and the fitting out of his ship, the Endurance. So in gratitude, he named a glacier after her. So we do have, in Ramsgate, we have connections very, very far afield. The other connection that I've learnt relatively recently is that the person who designed the sun shelter also designed Sydney Harbour Bridge. So as I walk on, I really hope I might meet some of the volunteers who keep this area so pristine and beautiful. And it's a relatively recent development. From 1974 until about 6 years ago, the Winterstoke Garden, Sun Shelter and Chine really were neglected. And the HAS report on which these podcasts have been based, really, there was a report into the condition of the Pulamite rocks, and then they have been conserved and lovingly tended. So the importance of this area has really been recognised, and that's something that's come out of the Heritage Action Zone designation of 2017. The last time I came here, I could hear the steady chip, chip, chip of people scraping away, removing little weeds in these rocks, because obviously they're very vulnerable to the effects of the weather, as even natural rocks are. So one of the volunteers told me that one of the great things about the survey that they helped with was that they were able to get to previously inaccessible places and root out some of the more invasive trees before they got even bigger and split the rocks. I'm just taking a moment to get out of the sun. I'm sitting in a modern shelter, relatively modern shelter, it looks like. It looks as though it's more modern than the 1920s sun shelter that I'm going to take you to. But it does give me a very good view of the Pulamite and some of the flowers that are planted on it. I've got oranges, yellows, very vibrant pinks. I can see those are mallow flowers. There are red poppies, there are fuchsias. There are snapdragons, there's rosemary, there's lavender. So you can just imagine the sound of the wind blowing in the trees, or you don't even have to imagine it, you can hear it, but you can imagine the smell as well. And just in front of me, there's a small child climbing a tree. It's a safe tree to climb, it's all right, but it's not so good for the rocks when they start to climb on the rocks. And during the 1970s, when this area was very neglected, the listed sun shelter and the rocks around it, they were used really for climbing on. They're called the monkey rocks by locals, which wasn't very, very good for the condition of the Pulamite, and probably one of the reasons why the HAS report had to call attention to what needed to be done to repair it. I love the fact that I've just been joined by some little boys who are peering over at me and galumphing around. That's exactly what they should be doing, isn't it? Right, on with our stately walk. Oh yeah, I can really smell now the flowers. There's a beautiful butterfly there. Cabbage white butterfly. Oh, a brown butterfly that's probably a meadow brown. You see the most gorgeous orange tips and chalk blue butterflies. Yellow brimstones, very, very yellow brimstones. Can't see any of those today. It's mostly these white cabbage white butterflies with, they're just white with a little black spot on their wings. Passing the hollyhocks, I do love a gladioli and a hollyhock. But so far, it's all leisure and pleasure, and no workers to be found scraping away. There's a glorious sunflower here, and this sunflower reminds me of Van Gogh. We're going to meet him tomorrow. Oh, I found them. Here they are. Just gone around the corner, and I'm now approaching the sun shelter. I'm just going to give a little bit of space so you can possibly hear people working away. There are people gardening, taking away the weeds, working tirelessly for our community. There's Clara Gibson at the top there. She orchestrates the team here and keeps them busy. I did talk to her earlier And she very kindly allowed me to sit down while she carried on working, which was fantastic to see. Very hard at work. Thank you.
Yes, we're not hard at work. We're taking it very easy. It's very hot.
It is very hot, isn't it? Yes, exactly. And that's exactly why this sun shelter was built. It's got a plaque here. It says Sir John Burnett and Partners, Architects. Now, I'm walking into this sun shelter. We locals, we call it the amphitheatre. And I've always thought, what a spectacular place for a show. More of that in a minute. So I'm going to sit down. I'm going to enjoy the view. And the view out here, oh, is absolutely stunning today. You couldn't get better. Very beautiful. I'm looking out. Sea sparkling. I can see some pulmonite in front of me and some planting, some evergreen shrubs to the right of it. And you've got this semicircular sun shelter that has very plain columns of the Doric order. And it used to be glazed. So when it was first built, it was partially glazed. And you can imagine that would have been very useful on a very windy day, such as we encountered before. So we're going to move on, and we're going to go straight ahead from this sun shelter, and we're going to go down the steps. But before we do so, let's just sit here a while, and it is very hot today, and let's listen to Sandra, because Sandra's got some lovely insights to share about how she feels when she comes here.
Well, when I go for walks, especially along the edge of the coast where the Pulhamite rock staircases are, overgrown with wonderful wild flowers and red poppies and cornflowers and all sorts of things, I think I'm in another world. And I always say to people, I'm in the Ramsgate Riviera. And since I moved down here, my concept of everything is as if I'm permanently on holiday.
Okay. Great.
Because that's how I feel, because I've moved down here from London, but I don't feel as if I'm in an alien space. I feel as if I'm so happy here, I am permanently on holiday. So when I get up, I look out the window, I smell the sea air, I hear the seagulls, and I know I'm by the sea, the healing power of the sea.
We're now going to go down, out from the sun shelter, down the steps, and down past the Pulhamite, and actually sort of be enclosed by the Pulhamite. You really experience it. And it's beautiful plants, so lovingly maintained by those volunteers. You can see a bit of natural flint there that's been inserted in the Pulhamite. Wow, now I'm looking over the cliff down. There's a lovely stretch of sand, then a little bit of rock where you can find the best fossils, I've been told. You get these glorious heart-shaped fossils. I don't know quite what they're called, but me and my children love finding them. It's such a joy to find them. So I'm now down on the lower esplanade where we can also promenade and people watch, and I'm watching some little children absolutely loving playing in a long, shallow, sandy rock pool. There's no other word for it, is there, than a rock pool? It's not like the permanent rocky pools that you get on the Western Undercliff. It's a little pool formed by the shifting of the sands, and I love that about this area because you don't know quite whether there is going to be a rock pool or not. I don't know if you can hear it slightly echoey because I'm in one of the many shelters. And down on the beach, there are people taking selfies, there are people taking pictures of themselves and others. And that was also a very, very, very valuable part of the Victorian seaside experience. You could have your photograph taken. And here in this slightly echoey shelter, this is one of the places that have been given a real new meaning and purpose and tradition almost, by the Ramsgate Festival of Sound. For the last few years, there's been people performing at the Winterstoke Sun Shelter. We've got Nadine Shah joining us in 2021 there. And whilst that is a ticketed event, there are also free events like Busk at Dusk. And what you can do is you promenade. You maybe start at the Winterstoke shelter and you come down those steps. And all along here, with the main sands on your left, walking back towards Ramsgate, you've got people performing. So in each little shelter, there'll be different bands, solo artists, some acoustic, some noisier. There were some wonderful, wonderful drummers last year, and singers of sea shanties. I'm just going to walk on, and it's going to be a little bit noisier. I've promenaded along next to the sands until I've reached the last of the, it has to be said, quite ugly concrete shelters. They were once painted by local schoolchildren, now being graffitied over with some fantastic words of wisdom here. Trust the ancients, that's quite a nice bit of graffiti. Love, etc. That's quite heartwarming, isn't it? And this was the venue for one of the bands for the Busk at Dusk. So this was a really interesting emerging tradition that emerged at the Ramsgate Festival of Sand last year. And I was very proud because two of my children performed. I'd never seen them perform before in public. And so that sort of activity really gives the youth a chance to become stakeholders in this area, if you want to use the jargon. They really need to care about this place. They really need to think that they are involved in the community and build their community and carry on looking after it. So one of the songs that Katie and Tom Ansell played was one composed by Katie, and it's informed by her experience of growing up in Ramsgate and looking out at the sea and experiencing its many moods, and including at night time when she looks out at the stars. Now, most people look up at the stars and they think how beautiful they are, but she thinks about them in terms of navigation, in terms of desolation. The stars are dead. She is a physicist. She is interested in these things. But we're just going to play out, and I'm going to leave you with this very evocative song, this composition. And you can end your walk here. If you've parked in the car park, you're nearly at the car park. If you're wanting to go back onto the main sands towards the obelisk and Wetherspoons, you just carry straight on in a straight line. It's all flat access. It's all easy. So on this lazy, sunshiny day, I'll say goodbye. I'll say thank you for joining me, and I do hope you'll join me on the next podcast, Podcast 3, that looks at the notion of Ramsgate as refuge. And it explores the beating heart of our community, which is our harbour. Thank you.